Jones and Mike. Real radio for real people who are real enough to realize they really still have a few things to figure out. Jones is a hockey-playing, city-living, vegan bachelor who practices transcendental meditation when he's not biking to shows and Cub games. Mike's a beer-swilling, married father of four from suburbia. His motorcycling, marathoning, and martial arts are pretty much on the shelf while he limos children all over town to their activities for the next decade.
Sound familiar?
It's, you know, shit dudes say.
About family,
women,
philosophy,
politics,
history,
people,
money,
pop culture,
kids,
fighting,
business,
life. Join the conversation. 312-957-7210. Hashtag Jones and Mike. 24/7 worldwide at jonesandmike.com.
This hour, do you cringe or clap when you see a leader cry? Why are the police in front of Mike's house? And why is Jones so obsessed with Brangelina?
This is Jones and Mike. Jones and Mike.
Jones, 1 week ago today, we were sitting here applauding the mayor of Chicago. He looks like the Joker, doesn't he, Rahm Emanuel?
He does. The way the hair just goes kind of straight up, it just needs a little splash of color. It would get very Jokerish.
Yeah, he's kind of like a weird. He's got a weird face. Like it's disconcerting. I think he looks evil.
He does look evil, and I know that he gets hit with that a lot. But he does look evil. He looks like just a demonic lizard.
That's right. Like David Icke, former English footballer and BBC presenter who now goes around and like talks. He like sells out Wembley Arena.
Talking about reptilians.
That's right. One
he
of his
does
theories.
Look, Rahm Emanuel does look reptilian.
David Icke literally stands on a stage at Wembley Arena and says that, like, the media and the elites are really reptiles from outer space. And every now and then, they show themselves. Like, their eyes flutter in a weird way where their reptilian side comes out. And if I had to peg someone as being reptilian, it's Rahm Emanuel.
At least in the Chicagoland area.
You're darn tootin'. And 1 week ago today, we were sitting there, like, applauding him, saying, oh my God, dude, this guy, we read him all wrong. He is the hero that this town has needed.
I know. It seems like it's much longer than a week ago, given what has transpired in the last week. It seems like it was almost years ago, where you're kind of looking at it like, what happened to that guy? You know, like when that head coach comes into town, he's going to turn the Bears around, and you're like, I believe him. I like what he has to say.
I'm buying into his program.
And then 2 years later, you're like, what happened? Yeah. I'm having that feeling towards Rahm Emanuel, and it's only been 7 days.
A week ago, we were applauding him because he had the nuts, honestly, to call out the black community for their fatherlessness. And honestly, he should be also calling out the government for fostering an environment and his own party and the people who surround, you know, like if the Democratic Party is a planet, like the moons of it being the unions and all of these lobbyists and groups that have encouraged this environment and this thought process that you don't need a father and a mother. You can just literally have babies and all sorts of them and start when you're 15. And everything's going to be okay because the government will be there to take care of you. And it clearly has not worked over the last 50 years. So he's, you know, was touting a week ago and we were talking about, wow, he's got this thing called BAM, some mentoring program to encourage fathers and children in the black community to have mentors and role models and to start to hopefully bridge that fatherlessness gap that has really, really hampered them. And we went, wow, that's third rally, that's leadership.
Yes. No, I believe I said in the last 10 years, that was the boldest political move that I had seen, maybe even going further back than 10 years, really. I was giving him that much credit. I'd never recalled that we had as lavishly praised the mayor of Chicago as much as we had.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, meanwhile, you had spotted this BAM, you know, mention, and he said, this is pretty cool. Let's talk about this. Great. I didn't realize it was part, and we were on the precipice at that time, of this far-reaching, you know, address that was carried on local TV and across local radio stations. I'm driving down the Stevenson this week on my way home from work, And they're like, we're going live to Mayor Emanuel, who's going to be addressing the violence plaguing the city of Chicago and his all-encompassing plan to be a solution for it.
And were you pumped? Like, finally we get to hear?
Well, yeah. I'm like, man, Jones is always on the cutting edge. I didn't realize that you were kind of giving us a preview of this speech, because he starts off saying, yeah, I'm hiring several thousand more police officers because violence is out of control in the city of Chicago. And it's like, okay, great. I don't know how you're going to pay for it, but I guess he probably touched on it in that speech. And then at the end of the speech, he unveiled the BAM thing, where he's like, look, we have this mentorship program, and it's, we believe it's going to be the, you know, not an overnight panacea necessarily, but it's an important first step.
Yeah.
And
that was testicular virility.
Nice.
Right there.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. And so, like, what a leader. This is what Chicago needs. We need a strong leader. Fast forward to the next morning. I'm watching the news, 6A, Channel 7, my thing. And they're live because he's out jogging with police cadets. And, like, I know some pretty fat police. So it's like, at some point, you guys were running. Like, how did you let yourselves go? But I guess they run in the police academy. And so he was out there jogging, and he's like in phenomenal shape, this guy. Like, he's a little guy, but like, I wouldn't mess with him.
No, he's fit. Yep.
He's like a triathlete, and he's out like running every morning. And it's not like, you know, like George W. and all these politicians, they seem to do that stuff, but it seems like it's kind of photo op-y. But like, that dude's like, he's taught that character. They show him afterward. He did like a little press conference. His hair's all messed up, but he doesn't care. And I'm like, this guy's got something. He's got something.
Yes.
I like it.
He's turned the corner. He's really figured out how to lead the city.
Yeah, he has. Yes, he is the solution to our problems. But you can do 1,000 things right, but one mistake can unravel all of those 1,000 good things that you did. Like, you know, I always tell my kids, hey, man, you can tell the truth all the time, and then you tell one lie, and now you're a liar. That one thing can unravel the whole sweater. And unfortunately, Rahm unraveled the whole friggin' sweater.
I can't believe how far we've traveled in 7 days.
Yeah, like, this is unacceptable. This is him at Malcolm X College unveiling the... Even that seems kind of pandering to me. I think you do this at City Hall, but whatever. He's apparently not been popular in the black community. So he, you know, this whole initiative is, you know, hiring all of these police officers. They're not even going to be on the streets until next summer, but be that as it may, all of this, the mentorship, all of it, it's to address the out of control, rampant virus of violence in the black community. So he goes to Malcolm X College, he gives this speech, and I'm listening to it on the radio live and in real time, and I couldn't believe my ears, Jones. Rahm Emanuel.
And then there's Arshel Dennis, a Chicago police officer.
Oh, God. Oh, jeez.
Who, after tragically losing his 19-year-old son to gun violence.
Here's where you get it together, Rahm. Get it? Andrea Zopp was like, get it together, Rahm.
Found the courage and strength.
Okay, next time.
To put his police uniform, his badge back on, and serve the rest of the city with dignity, with duty, and with dedication to the rest of us.
Oh, Jesus.
When I first heard that, I thought he said with nudity.
Dude, in real time, I thought, oh my God, he just said nudity.
I did too.
Here, this.
With duty.
Yeah, with nudity. Now, I want to be clear, because I know that you and I are both coming from the same
space. Duty.
With duty?
Okay, you got duty, I got nudity. Please don't serve with either, is my request.
Did he say dignity?
I think that's what he meant to say.
One of the biggest problems with crying in public is that nobody can understand you.
No.
Because you're trying to say dignity, and it's either duty or nudity.
Duty.
I know. Now, I want to be clear. I know you and I, we're coming both from the same space.
Yeah, we're cut from the same cloth,
yes,
in this regard.
We're not. The story that he is telling is a sad, tragic story.
Yeah.
But when I'm hearing, when I'm hearing him go through the details of it, it's the crying that is the struggle for me. You introduced this idea to me a while back of crying is unacceptable. Crying is not a part of leadership. It should be. There's no room for crying.
Yeah, there's no room for it in masculinity.
Right. Now, I buy into that 97%, but I do buy into it 97%. And when I hear him at a press conference bawling, almost inconsolable over what has happened to someone that he doesn't know,
yeah,
I find it insulting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I don't believe him. I understand that if you want to get up in front of a podium and you want to speak from a place of intellectual sensitivity or empathy, where you can sit there and say, boy, I know that this has to be so tough for this father.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you can go through that and there's a level of sincerity there. But what, unless someone can point out to me, actually, this officer was on Ram's patrol.
Yeah, he was at
the
that
godfather.
Kid's, yeah, exactly.
Of this.
Which unless, is ironic because that's his nickname. Like derisively, like on Drudge Report, they call him the Godfather.
True, yeah, true. Yeah.
So good one.
Yeah, maybe he is.
I like what you're doing there, dude.
So unless someone can make that connection for me.
Yeah, you're getting.
And then there's Arshel Dennis.
Man up, Jones. Come on.
The Chicago police officer.
Maybe he just had, you know what? Maybe he just had a frog in his throat. I'm rethinking this right now.
Jesus Christ. You guys are all falling apart. What's wrong with you people? Get some nuts.
I'm rethinking this right now. And I would just like to say, no, it's just...
Well, after tragically losing his 19-year-old son.
Yeah, and it was several months ago, so it's fairly fresh. But even if he was giving the eulogy or something, I could see getting that wound up.
Yes.
But it's been months, and it's like, okay, it's sad. You definitely, if you're a public speaker, you bring your tone down. You're not doing, like, a creepy, like, smile here. You're not doing your Joker face. You're very solemn and somber. It's you put this in the speech to be a, you know, kind of a sad moment before triumphantly announcing how we're going to overcome this scourge.
This will never happen again.
Yeah, that's right. But instead, it brought it to a complete halt because I turned the station. I couldn't handle it. And I'm not trying to be like, because I'm so tough, but I don't want to hear crying, period. And I don't want to hear crying out of a man. And I certainly don't want to hear it crying coming out of a leader, a supposed leader. So I turned the station. And I'm not ashamed of that.
And I don't think that you should be.
What kind of a world is it where we, like, go, no, it's manly to cry?
Is it just us? I'm wondering, are people in Chicago going, he cares? We now know he cares. Is it possible?
Yeah, it's almost like I'm taking the men should never cry and I'm leaving it at that. You're saying, no, his crying was complete BS and I'm offended by it.
I am. I am offended by it because I don't believe it.
Jones, it's okay.
I've been very happy with the fish oil that I've received. I trust that it's PCB, mercury-free, it's clean, it's wild-caught, and it's the best stuff that I found.
Chris is just one of thousands of satisfied Pacific Rim customers around the world and here in Chicago. You need omega-3s daily, but most of us here in Chicago do not get nearly enough of them from our diet. Even worse, if you're like me, you eat too much beef, and that drives up your omega-6s. Those are the omegas that lead to inflammation in your joints and in your arteries. As I like to say, omega-3s counteract the beef sandwiches. They lower cholesterol, reduce inflammation, joint and back pain, boost brain function and eyesight, improve circulation and performance, open your lungs, and give you a healthier heart. Why are you not getting all of these benefits from Pacific Rim Omegas? Try Pacific Rim for free. Just pay the shipping. This is an exclusive offer just for listeners of this radio station. Go to radio.mydailyomega.com and get your free trial of Pacific Rim. Go to radio.mydailyomega.com.
Jones and Mike Worldwide at jonesandmike.com. 312-957-7210. Hashtag Jones and Mike.
J
Jones, you'll be happy to know I have more excerpts of Rahm Emanuel's speech at Malcolm X College this week, where he announced sweeping initiatives to add more police officers and mentorship programs to address what he believes and what we believe, what I believe, to be the major, you know, underlying root cause of the violence and the economic hardships in the black community, which is fatherless homes. Let's go now to Rahm Emanuel from earlier this week. Oh, Jesus. Oh God. Rahm, Mayor. Oh, no. See, he's
just got to read between the squeaks. There's a plan there.
He's falling to pieces on the dais. Andrea Zopp up there right now, his right-hand woman, trying to console him. I can't live in a world where people are like, no, it's totally cool to just bawl all the time. I think it's bad for you.
Well,
I know that they say, like, scientifically it's good for you, but I have never felt better after doing it. So I just go, you know, it's kind of like throwing up. Like, I never have been one of those people like, dude, make yourself throw up, you'll feel better. I'm like, no, I always want to die. When
no,
I'm doing
I've had that experience on both, where I've cried and felt better and thrown up where I felt better. So I've had that experience. Now, to have it at a press conference when you're talking about someone who has died that you did not know months previous, and you're doing it while you're announcing a plan where you're going to try to attempt to curb violence in the city, you're announcing 1,000 cops, it was 1,000 or 2,000, I forget which, but
yeah,
a significant
number. Yeah, I think like from like 12,500 to like 13,500,
okay,
something like
that. Okay, so 1,000 cops roughly that you're bringing back into the fold.
Yeah, you know, like that should be enough to pander or to get the cops on your side, right? Like if he was crying to like go like, I'm one of you, I feel your pain when you guys are in pain, because he spent a lot of his speech talking about we have to support the police. So you would think like, hey, I'm, you know, growing the ranks and the money toward you, flowing toward you by a significant percentage. So that should be enough to get the cops on his side, right? So who was he pandering to? Was it black people? Like, I feel the pain of black violence, personally?
I don't think so. He was pandering to some... maybe it was just pandering to police unions. Maybe that was it. Because I don't know that that message was necessarily pandering to the black community. So maybe he was pandering to police unions. And the flip side of it is, maybe that was a real reaction. Maybe it was sincere.
Oh,
that
well, then I got real problems.
No, I know. No. I agree
with
that.
I almost wanted to be a lie, man.
I agree with that. I mean, on both... Either way I look at it, it's either those are real tears, which I have a problem with from someone who is supposed to be on call 24/7, leading my city, a city where it's like... And I've told you, the eyeball test has been eye-opening this year. Each week now, I am seeing an uptick in violence with my own eyeballs. I'm like seeing crimes every week.
Really?
People getting chased. Yes, this week.
Well, last week you were talking about the two like suspects, the two perps who had like robbed a lady of her purse and got
out
busted
in front of my building. Yeah. And then they ran around to the back of my building where I lived, where they got arrested. Yes. So that was just last week. This week.
Oh, jeez.
I'm divvying back to my apartment. Do you know where the 17th Church of Christ Scientist is?
Yeah,
it's
so
that
like
circular looking
Wacker
building. Like, yeah, Wacker and Wabash.
Uh-huh.
I'm pedaling back on my divvy bike.
You ever been in there?
I never have, no.
Oh,
I just
God.
Feel like you can't get out of there. Like I feel
it's like a roach motel.
Is it?
No, I'm imagining.
Oh no, I thought you meant like it's run down.
Oh, no. I want to go in there and, like, see what's doing. Like, it looks like a spaceship landed.
It does look like a spaceship has landed. If there was ever, like, this apocalyptic America or apocalyptic Chicago where you could just walk wherever.
It's coming.
I would go in there and then check it out. But not while I think
yeah,
there could be other
that
church scientists
off.
In there.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it would be cultish. I just feel like there's a real...
Yeah, like they're wearing white robes.
Marshall, there's a real Marshall Applewhite feel
to
it.
Oh, yeah. Put on your black Nikes and follow us.
Yes. So, but anyway, I'm divvying right up. I'm going up Wabash.
North on Wabash toward
approaching
that.
Approaching Wacker. I'm
yeah.
like right next to the 17th Church of Christ Scientist.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I see this, I see like this blur of this person running, and then I hear... That police, I don't know why the police do this, but you hear that like whoop whoop You know, when they don't...
the little chirpy thing that
the cars can do.
Yeah.
It's like a warning.
Yeah.
And that's like really... when they have the siren on, it could be maybe they're trying to get to some place where an old lady tipped over. But whenever you hear the like, whoop, whoop, that's like serious business. Like
really?
Somehow
you think that that's... like, I always feel like that's the thing. Like, I don't want to put my sirens on, but I have to get your attention briefly.
I think they're trying to maybe alert someone else if they feel like there's another law enforcement officer down the block. So these cops, there's this blur of this person running, and then they hear whoop, whoop. And then all of a sudden the lights come on, and this cop kind of just goes right on Wabash, like right up to this curb. And I see this young kid hightailing it. It's a African-American kid in a white T-shirt and jeans. So white T-shirt and jeans, I've learned from my police friends, that's bad news.
Really? That's a profiling thing?
Well, the idea is, and it's funny, when I've seen the people who have been milling around my neighborhood.
The ne'er-do-wells.
Yes. They're always in jeans and white T-shirt. And the idea is, whenever they would mug anybody, is when you go to describe them, you say, I don't know, it was a young black guy, white T-shirt and jeans. And
that's like the black kid uniform, so they can't, it's like,
exactly.
Where's Waldo?
Yeah, no. That is the exact psychologist.
What?
The police, no, I've had police tell me this.
Seriously?
When they've gone into the home of known gang members, and they've gone through and they're searching for something, they'll go through drawers of clothing, and they just will have full drawers of jeans, black or blue jeans, and just white T-shirts.
See, they got to get, the gangbangers got to get more disciplined. They should open up the closet, and the full outfit will be on hanger after hanger.
But that is all they wear. With the idea that if you go to identify them, all you have is young black male, white T-shirt and jeans, and then you go down the block to see who that person is.
Yeah,
and
good
there's
luck.
Like 20 of 20 African American kids in white T-shirts and black jeans. That's the idea.
Oh,
so anyway,
my God.
I see that what
That's
I've been told
blowing.
is that criminal profile of the jeans and the white T-shirt. And this kid's running past me. He has something in his hand. It looked like it was some kind of coach purse or something like that. And he's sprinting in front of me.
To me, that's the tell. Black boy with a purse in his hand.
Right.
Done.
No, that...
easy.
That, yeah, that was odd to
Rob,
see a young man running with
a
purse.
Let's
but
go jogging.
When I saw what I had been told was the telltale signs of a gang member in modern America, the white T-shirt and black jeans, I was like, oh my God, this is happening right in front of me. And this kid ran right in front of me.
Did you feel like springing into motion and like throwing your jiu-jitsu skills down? What if you armbarred an assailant? Awesome.
What would you say if I told you I did go into action?
You tripped him.
No.
You went.
He's right over there, officer.
No, this kid goes running past me, and I can see these cops are not going to get out of this car in time, and this kid's gone. So he goes. I'm on my divvy bike. He goes bounding down the steps down the Riverwalk, and I start pedaling after him.
What?
On upper whacker, like trying to keep pace with him. Like, you know, when you see in those movies, like Will Smith is chasing somebody and he's like on the, you know, the gangway above and he's like looking down at the guy and he'll eventually just jump down
on top of him.
I was kind of doing that where I'm pedaling on my 3-speed Mary Poppins divvy bike after the perp.
And the perp is just outpacing you severely.
Well, he was more mobile than me, but all I wanted to do was keep an eye on him. I didn't know what I was really going to do at that point other than keep an eye on him and look for other cops. And I was thinking, like, do I scream he's got my purse? Like, what was I going to do? So, and this is the city that you've got me living in, Rahm Emanuel. No time for tears.
That's right.
So I'm in action. And for those of you who don't know, the Divvy bike is that public bike in the city of Chicago. They're like the sky blue bikes.
Yeah, that's
They're
right.
3-speed. They look like grandma bikes. They are not really mobile. They're not really fast.
They're not very cool. In fact, I think studies show that most men who cry divvy at some point.
I would like to see that.
Very
study.
High percentage of criers
that.
Divvy.
I don't believe that because I am tough enough to chase down a perp on the streets. How many men do you know would do that?
So how does this end, dude?
I'm chasing after this guy. And then all of a sudden I look up. Thank God I looked up. There's a part on Upper Wackers, you get past the 17th Church of Christ Scientist.
So toward Michigan.
Yes. Where there's like a little barricade. So I couldn't go any further.
Oh, my God.
So I lost him. But could you have imagined if I was just like stayed locked on to this guy?
Totally.
And then just boom, yeah, right into the barricade.
That's how
and
you
then,
end.
Like needed an ambulance, right?
That's right.
So I'm just saying when now, and this was like the next day that Rahm Emanuel was crying about what's going on in the city of Chicago. And here I am just 24 hours previous chasing down people on a Divvy bike.
Yeah.
Running around with some woman's coach purse.
That's right. That's right.
So I say all that to say there is no room for crying when you are running the city of Chicago. There's no room for crying.
No.
In the mayor's office.
Now is not the time. Look, there's never a time if you ask me for crying. But definitely not now. Now is the time for, as you said, testicular virility. Like, now's the time for everybody to man up. Everybody, well, including guys on divvies.
Yes, think about it. All right, it's a time to man up. If people saw me, you wouldn't instantly think like, oh, there's a man up guy. And yet here I was on the divvy chasing the perp. Now, where's our top mayor?
That's right.
Just standing over a box of Kleenex?
Yeah, dabbing his eyes. So these politicians, like Obama, has done the eye swipe during certain speeches.
Oh, that's the worst. He was horrible with that. And then when,
but I do feel like there's water there, and it's like, I don't know how you learn that. Like, I think I've spent so much of my life trying to never cry that, like, I don't even know if I'm capable of it.
I know that I've made myself cry because I thought I remember when I saw actors do it, I thought, like, can you do it? But it was, and I did. I was able to make myself develop tears.
Was it convincing?
I don't think so. And it took a lot of work. Like, you really have to put a lot of pressure in your face.
Can you try it right now? I want to see if you can do it.
All right. Let me try it right now. Jeez, I don't think I can because you're looking at me now.
Okay. Well, I won't look. Think about something really sad. I don't know what that is. Like, what would be sad to you?
I'm not getting anything. Wait, I'm blinking a little bit. Is there any moisture?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, no. See, it takes... So to think like these dudes are doing it like that.
I think that there has to be a political operative out there who... Either he can or he has like some secret Hollywood connections for like some sort of training or some sort of a chemical that's like a delayed reaction chemical. You put it in your eye before the speech. You time out the speech so that it's going to activate 15 minutes in, and that's right during your sad part. And then your eyes start to just water, and all you have to do is just add a little bit of this.
Or you get someone, maybe there's some kind of... Like those little laser lights that they like try to shine in like athletes' eyes when they're playing football or something to distract them. Maybe there's a certain color of light that irritates your cones and rods, and there's someone at the back of the room.
Oh.
It's time. Hit Rahm with the yellow laser light that'll irritate the rods and cones. He'll feel the tears and he'll know to start to quiver.
Interesting.
I wonder.
You know what, dude?
I just completely put that out there. I have no idea if that would even be
possible. Well, on that same tip, I think, you know what this is? This is MK Ultra. MK Ultra. Somebody in the crowd said some word and it activated the crying impulse. Because all these politicians are being controlled by MKUltra. Think on that. Think on that, Jones. It's possible.
I'm gonna give it a think.
I'll
get back to you. I wanna see. I'll get back to you next week.
Now I wanna learn how to do this, because if you can do this, if you can teach yourself how to cry on command, imagine now that we live in this panty waist society where apparently men can just cry. And in fact, you're expected to cry. Like, I think that that's a very important leverage tool. So at work, whenever you have something important at home, like how many dudes are like crying in front of their wives in order to win the argument? Like, when is crying like it's legit, it's cool, it's fine? And when is it like a leverage, pandering, manipulative tool that you should despise? When, Jones? When? Congratulations, by the way, on being a superhero. Who knew?
I felt good. It did feel good for a moment. It did feel good because it was that moment where I was like, it was my time to jump into action, and I did it. on a divvy bike with a backpack.
That's impressive.
But I did it.
Do you think the jiu-jitsu, I can't even say it, do you think that that has helped you with your testicular virility in this way?
It couldn't have hurt. It can't be hurting. Now, what I was doing, I wasn't putting myself in a position where I was going to be using it. I was just chasing him to keep a line of sight on him. Yeah. But he could have easily looked up and seen me doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
I was putting myself out there.
Yeah, yeah, you were in a big way, Jones. I had a little experience with the police this week right in front of my own house. I'll tell you about that next, Jones and Mike.
When it comes to finding a holistic doctor near you, where can you turn for help? When you need a cancer doctor who will advocate for a non-surgical, non-chemical course of treatment, where can you find her? When you need a chiropractor or acupuncturist, when you need help with ailments that many doctors and even hospitals just plain turn away, like Lyme disease, who can help you with natural solutions and strategies for diabetes? When you need help to find an integrative, functional, complementary, alternative approach, option, and practitioner, the Health Freedom Network is there. Since 2009, the Health Freedom Network has been a leading resource for natural medicine and health information and research. Now we're also your best resource to give you access to the top docs in a number of specialties, from cancer to stroke, and in modalities from chiropractic to dentistry. The Health Freedom Network's directory at healthfreedomnetwork.com. Better information for better choices. Find your new health practitioner at www.healthfreedomnetwork.com.
Jones and Mike Worldwide at jonesandmike.com. 312-957-7210. Hashtag Jones and Mike.
Ironically, I believe, this is my prediction, the 1,000 new cops that are hired, they're all going to be put like on Michigan Avenue and in the Gold Coast and stuff like that. Because you live in the Gold Coast, the crime is encroaching upon you. Like, the most powerful people in Chicago live in these areas that are now starting to be, you know, inconvenienced, if not endangered. That can't stand. That can't stand. So either the new cops will be encircling these neighborhoods and, like, nobody leaves, which I don't allow you to do that, like an open-air apartheid-type, you know, prison like Palestine, like Gaza or the West Bank or something. Or you put the new cops in the posh areas.
Right. And no, I think a lot of them will go to the Gold Coast. I think you're going to see a lot of them go up to Lakeview. There's been a lot of crimes in Lakeview, actually. And then even Beverly. Did you hear there's been crazy home invasions down in Beverly?
Really?
There was one that was on the block of 106th and Tallman where the Glatzes live.
Oh, yeah? All right.
Yeah, home invasion. Just walked in at 9:30, brandished the gun.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, dude.
So I would imagine, because there's got to be a strong voting block on that southwest side. They'll get some cops. Lakeview will get some cops. The Gold Coast
you
will
get some cops.
Yeah, right.
You
yes,
get a cop.
Yeah, right, yes, yes.
And you get a cop. This week, I felt like I had my own security detail. Like, I felt like I was Emmanuel. Like,
and
Emmanuel.
Did you love it?
No, not at all. Like, Emmanuel's always got, like, a cop car in front of his house, right?
Yes, he does.
And certainly, like, Obama's, you know, block is, like, under lockdown, so that's not
crazy.
Even, like, comparable. But
have you ever been to Obama's block?
No, no. You said it was not fun.
No, I've been to both. Well, obviously, my sister and I have a place that we own on Rahm's block, so we see that all the time.
Oh, really? But that's Rahm's block, Hermitage?
Yeah, he lives two blocks from us.
Oh, okay.
So, but I've been to Obama's joint as well, and it is just not welcoming.
Yeah, no, I'm sure it was uncomfortable, but like, Emmanuel's block has to be more normal, except that there's
yes.
a 24/7 police presence.
Yes, yes, yeah, yeah. You
and
can
even
see
like,
right in front of his place.
Yeah, yeah, and that makes sense. But even, like, Ed Burke for, like, 25 years had, a security detail. I think they just, like, bonged him on that and got rid of that, like, a couple of years ago. But, like, he had 24/7 police surveillance in front of his house, too. And this week, my dog's going crazy, and I look out, and there was some sort of police activity in front of my house. I never even see cops in my neighborhood. Like, this is the most idyllic, ridiculously boring neighborhood in America, which is why we love it. Like, you know, there's no traffic. There's nothing. Nothing happens. Nothing ever happens in our neighborhood. It's great. It's great. So when you look out and you see police activity, there were like two marked and like two unmarked cars. And like people, like cops on foot, like meandering about right in front of my house. Now, I know the instinct is to go out and see what's doing. And so I fight that instinct. I go, like, I tell all the kids, all right, we'll get away from the windows. It's none of our business. Don't worry about it. And, like, for whatever reason, they listen to me. Like, they actually were pretty calm about it. Especially for never having seen any of that stuff in our neighborhood. But every now and then, because my dog is barking at them, every now and then I would peek out, like, through the window, and I would, like, see what was doing. And eventually the unmarked cars, or one unmarked and one marked car left. There were no other cops on foot. But for, like, 2 hours, there was an unmarked and a marked car in front of my house. Just like it would be, like, at Rom's house. Mm-hmm. And I did not feel better. I did not feel good about it. In fact, I felt like, are they here to serve me a warrant or something? Like, are they waiting for the warrant to come in here? Like, what is this? And, like, a little voice in my head was, go out and ask them. But then another voice said, dude, don't. You've approached police before. You've done that, like, hey, guys, how are you thing? And they kind of look at you like, get out of here. If we wanted to, you know, if we wanted to hear from an a-hole, we'd fart. Get out, kid. Like, they're not.
That's always a good one.
Yeah, they're not, like, they do not, like, adhere to the serve and protect that's on their car. They don't act like they work for me. Like, I kind of hate that when citizens are like, you work for me. Like, of course, that's not the way it feels ever.
Right.
Like, you know, Chance the Rapper, wasn't it him who got, like, mugged? Some like activist or something was mugged, and he like went into the precinct to like report it, and he like they didn't believe him, and they kicked him out. And he like had his phone, and he like recorded how like they treated him. They were like get out of here.
I've never seen that.
It happened like 2 weeks ago. So like maybe it's all of this negative publicity surrounding cops. I don't know, but I have in the past. I have like gone out like, hey guys, so what's going on? I have a right to know what's happening in my neighborhood, and they kind of just look at you like, meh. We're not allowed to tell you anything. Get out. So, you know, dude, I had a burglary suspect posing, you know, in my house. I forgot about that until right this second. I literally. Had a cop show up at my house once and say, that exterminator truck down your driveway, where is he? And I'm like, he's in my basement spraying for bugs. And they're like, could you tell him to come out here, please? And I go down there, and the dude is allegedly or purportedly doing his thing. And I'm like, there's a police officer here to see you. And the guy goes outside. Him and the cop take a little bit of a walk and like, discuss something. After a couple of minutes, I walk over and I'm like, would somebody like to tell me what's going on here? And the cop was kind of like, this guy's going to be taking a little ride with me. Everything's fine.
What?
He's going to pull his truck onto the street and he'll be back later to get it. And so I'm like, okay, can you tell me anything else? And he was kind of like, no. And I'm like, he was just in my house. What are you talking about?
Why is there... Okay, what would be in the suburbs? Is there anything where... In the city, if you run into a problem, you can always do the go to my alderman. Is there an equivalent in the suburbs? You just have to go to the mayor's office?
You have it, but in the suburbs, just like
trustee?
You don't know who your trustee or your alderman is or whatever. It's not the same way.
But that would just seem like...
in the city, like you got a problem with your sidewalk, you know where to go.
But that just seemed like that was an opportunity. You had a clear chance to go up the chain of command and go, someone was in my house.
Oh, yeah,
dude. The police
dude.
Wanted him out of the house, then said he can come back later to get my car. I would like to know, I would almost even frame it like, as a registered gun owner, I would like to know why he's going to be coming, what has happened and why he's going to be coming back to get his van. Like,
totally.
Would you not want to keep your eye on this guy when he returns? Like,
oh, well, so they leave and I call and I ask for, you know, the desk sergeant and I tell him my tale of woe and he was like, yeah, no, I can't tell you anything, but the guy will be back to get his car later on, or he won't. I don't know. It was, you know, he didn't talk like that. It's Naperville. Yeah. But you know, they were real kind of dismissive. Later on, the guy came to get his truck, and he rang the doorbell, and he explained to me. The cops never told me nothing. He explained to me what happened. Apparently, the outfit he worked for was actually like a burglary ring. And he was brought, all of the workers for this company were brought in for questioning because, like, one of the higher-ups and some of the underlings had been going around, and, like, they would go into your basement and pretend to spray, but they would actually unlatch the window to the window well that you actually can climb in and out of, the escape hatch that every, you know, building has to have. And then later on, they would come, ring the doorbell. If you weren't home, they'd go around, undo the window well cover, and get into your house. And this guy, everyone had been rounded up for questioning, and including this guy, who, by the way, when the cop came, was by the window well. In my basement. And he insisted on starting in the basement. So I'm kind of feeling like he was part of it.
That's crazy.
And the cops never said nothing to me. And in fact, we're kind of like, you don't need to know. If you ever need to know something, we'll let you know, okay? Dumbo?
That's so crazy, though, that they wouldn't... It would even make their jobs easier if they get this guy away and then someone places a phone call or another cop comes back around and says, look, here's what's going on.
Yeah.
Please,
no.
If you can do us a favor, do yourself and do us a favor.
Yeah.
Make sure all your windows are latched.
You think
tight.
That they would like to get the credit for, like, look, we are so on it.
Yes.
We proactively took a possible burglar out of your home. We did it peaceably. We did it very... diplomatically, we didn't cause a scene, or blah, 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 blah. You'd think they'd like that credit. They not only, I got to say, they're not only not smart enough to get that credit, but then they're dumb enough to, like, you know, treat me like, you know, I'm a jerk store for, like, wanting to know what the hell just transpired in my own house.
And the funny part of that whole story is you come away from it thinking that the potential criminal that was inside your home was the more upstanding dude who was like, hey, look, I'll tell you what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe I was in your house. Maybe I was unlatching the window. I certainly am not going to rip it off now because you know about me. But here's what's going on. That person was willing to tell you what was up. The police officer that came to your home and asked you to go get the potential criminal.
Yeah. Tell him to come out here and have the word with
is
me.
Is not
like,
going.
What?
Yeah. Oh, my God. God, that's crazy.
Meanwhile, what if I would have went down in the basement and the guy was like, you're not going to take me alive, Coppa.
Right.
Now all of a sudden I'm like, you know, like, so there was a lot to not like about that situation. And I got to be honest, like, that's not the only story I have of that nature where I call for information and they treat me like a schmo. I walk across the street, or like I've had neighbors harass me by using like the cops as a weapon. You know, they call the cops on you like every day.
That.
I had a crazy neighbor who would call every day. And even after the guy got exposed and the cops knew it, they still wanted me to come in to have like mediation with that neighbor. And I'm like, no. You need to ticket and or arrest him for wasting your time and all the filing, you know, calling the police when there's not actually a disturbance and all of these things. Like, you need to take care of it. That's it. Why do I have to be inconvenienced? I've already been inconvenienced by a crazy neighbor. And then, you know, by association, you've inconvenienced me. So why should I come in and have mediation with a psychopath? Tell him to stop it. So, like, I've not had, like, positive experiences with these characters. So when I look out, and for 2 hours, there's an unmarked and a marked car in front of my house on the most quiet street in America, I wonder, but I don't wonder enough to, like, call and inquire because I don't want to be on their radar. Like, part of me wanted to be like, my dog's barking. It's 10 at night. I want my kids to go to bed. I don't know why you jerks are here. Get out. Like, go to, like, some school parking lot and talk about fantasy football or something. Don't do it in front of my house. My dog is programmed to bark at people, which is why I like it. So, like, but I didn't want to talk to them, and I didn't want to call. So I just let it go on. Eventually, they left, which was cool. But I was relieved, honestly. So that's where we're at in America now. When you don't feel better because the cops are there, you feel like, oh God, how is this going to end well for me? What are they going to find? Are they going to see that I don't have a sticker on my license plate on my own driveway? What's going to happen next? How does this end? So I have a dog with an electric collar, and she has the run of the property, but if she leaves the property, she gets, you know, a little zap on her neck, right? So she doesn't want to do that. But she'll, like, go out and bark at people. Sometimes I have to tell her to come back in. So that night, with the cops in front of the place, I took her out on a leash in my own backyard. because I'm like, I don't know. Maybe she starts barking. Maybe they cap her.
Right, right.
And is that irrational to feel that way? Am I going overboard? Maybe,
no,
but
that
I mean,
kind of things happen.
Before. It's happening a lot. It seems like there's a new, you know, and I know that in the city of Chicago alone, there's 12,000 cops. So in Northeast Illinois, there's got to be, you know, 80,000. In America, there has to be like, you know, 2 million cops or something crazy. So like out of 2 million, if there's 5 videos of them capping a dog, that's not a very high percentage. But it's like that constant deluge of negative publicity is starting to take hold. That plus I've never had super good experiences anyway.
Was there at any point did you feel that you wanted to, just from the overall stress and pressure of the situation, release a tear?
It did not cross my mind. I was laughing, though, as I'm walking my own dog in my own backyard on a leash when I don't have to. Because the people that allegedly are hired to protect me and her because she's my property, because they're there. Like, that's how upside down things have become.
And how long ago was this?
This was this week.
I don't under... You've got to... Just at least as a matter of practice, you should reach out to your trustee. And just see.
Just go through the exercise of finding out who it is.
Just go through the exercise and say, hey... This is what was happening, and he and even double back and say, and this is the experience that I've had previously. Do you have any information for me as to what that was?
Just to make them
and
like
previously,
earn their $4,000 a year.
Yes, this was my experience, and you know this is why I'm concerned to really say anything. But I would like to know, is there any information that you would have for me, Mr. or
yeah,
Mrs. Trustee?
That's right. Just make them get off the couch and do something for a change.
Just do it and just see what happens.
All
I'm
right.
curious.
I will do that. I know that there were a couple of neighbors, like 3 houses down from me. There's like a little stretch of street that my neighbor Leonard believed that there was drug deals going on. And I was like, what? I'm like, I see kids like kind of staging for the night. Like they'll all meet there and then they'll all kind of hightail it out of there to go to some party or something. Like I've seen like kids there. But I'm like, how do you know they're drug dealers? Like, look. And he's a black guy. So he's just like, look, I know a drug deal when I see it. And I'm like, oh, I don't know. Just because you're black doesn't mean you win this argument, dude. Like, give me some examples of why you believe this was a drug deal. Jill's yelled at those kids before when she's seen them, like, lighting fireworks off and stuff at each other. She's, like, told them to get out of here. And they kind of gave her some lip, but then they got out of there. So I'm like, that don't feel like drug dealers to me when my wife's pushing them around and I'm chasing them off the street. So... But they went to the cops, and the cops kind of like were like, well, maybe we'll allocate some more resources to that neighborhood, but probably not. So, like, nobody really gets any satisfaction from dealing with the police. I'm telling you, like, and everyone's like, well, we'll call, you know, you won't have anyone to call if there's not any cops. You need cops. It's like, I don't know, dude. Every story I hear about, like, you know, it's citizens like you leaping into action. Now I know there has to be... acts of heroism happening. There has to be. I just would like to see more of it and hear more about it because I just don't. All I hear is the negative stuff, and then I hear like that crimes are being foiled by citizens. Or like there's a video out right now about like a home invasion where the woman came out like guns a-blazing.
Yeah, did you see that video?
And she starts capping dudes and like they have guns too, but they start running away. In Detroit, the police actually say, it could take us up to a half hour to get there, so you should be armed and you should defend your own home and your own person. Like, we cannot help you. Like, so, like, this idea that, like, more cops is the solution to anything, I just don't buy it.
I'm willing to see how that experiment plays out this time next year when there's 1,000 more feet on the street in my neighborhood. I'm interested to see that. Because this summer, it's just the eyeball test has just been, depending on your perspective, it's either been an A+ or an F for tomfoolery.
For crime, but
that
you've even
not seen.
But you've acknowledged, or your premise is that you've seen a police pullback where they actually are less likely to get involved in criminal activity.
And I have seen where they were less likely to get involved, but knowing that there are 1,000 less cops out on the streets, I'm just interested to see where things will be this time next year.
That's fine.
2 years from now.
Okay.
Because it has been bedlam. down where I live. Like, every week I'm seeing something I never saw before.
All right, well, 1,000 cops out of 13,500 is 7%. So you're talking about having 7% more people out there is going to make a discernible difference in crime.
I'm not willing to say
that that's the case.
All I can say is I've been living down there during the 7% decrease, and I didn't even know that there was a 7% decrease.
I'm not saying that there's a decrease. I'm saying there's going to be 7% more.
Well, no, they're getting back to the 1,000 cops. They had 1,000 cops at the start of – this is to get it back to the levels of law enforcement when ROM first started.
Oh.
So this isn't purely the 1,000 cops is getting those numbers back up. It's not just new additions.
All right. Great band, by the way. But so here's the deal. Like, beyond that, these – look, cops, my friends, my blue friends, you gotta like impart, like, we can Ron can up get up there like a crybaby and say, oh, support the people in blue, they're there for you. You've got to do a better job of like trying to at least act like, you know, you're not there to police me. I feel like you're there to police me, the law-abiding schmo, less than you're there to stop, you know, the people in gangbanger uniforms. I didn't realize they were so easy to profile. White t-shirt and jeans.
Well,
everyone thinks that, oh, you're just picking him out because he's black. It's like, no, he's wearing the gangbanger uniform, white t-shirt and jeans.
That's what I've been told by police officers. And this week, when I was on my divvy bike as a private citizen enforcing the law,
yeah, you were dressed as that.
I found myself changing.
But you're
chasing.
Really a superhero.
Yes.
Indeed. I mean, dude, the last Chicago police officer I had anything to do with was pulling over on Clark Street to pick you up, realizing I was in a no standing, no parking zone, and trying to swing out onto Clark to pull down the street. But like, there was cars coming, so I couldn't immediately, but my wheels were turned. I was getting ready to pull back out onto Clark South, and bam, out like a superhero, a cop jumps out in front of my car, snaps a photo of me and my license plate, and I get a $75 fine in the mail.
I still am trying to pay you back.
That's the last time I had anything to do with a cop in the city of Chicago. And I got to tell you, not a positive experience. So I got to tell you, they feel like more like revenue collectors, and they feel like they're there to like police me more than they're there to stop, you know, the ne'er-do-wells who are out harassing people, like, on the Gold Coast or over by Marina City or over by Navy Pier. And until that feeling goes away, I don't see any, you know, you can put 100,000 of those guys out there, I'm not going to feel any better about them. I feel like they need to be avoided. I can only imagine how black people feel about them,
well,
who are law-abiding.
Certainly in those communities, I can empathize with that. I'm just saying.
I didn't want to go out of my own house in Napertopia, Whiteville, to go talk to two white cops. I can't imagine what a black dude in Englewood feels like when he sees three cops out in front of his house. There's no way he's going out there. None. Zero chance. Zero.
I don't know. I don't know about that. I understand that people in that community do. There are many in that community that do feel unsafe. But I've seen a lot of brazen activity in the city this year where I really get a strong sense that there are many people out there that do not live in that fear. They are not afraid of running into cops.
All right. Well, you know, we'll see how it all turns out. 1,000 more cops coming to a street corner near you in the city of Chicago in summer of 2017.
It'll be an interesting experiment.
And you know what's interesting, Jones? Brangelina.
I know.
Not since Bennifer have I been this upset.
It is upsetting. This actually may be the segment where we both cry.
Another Pacific Rim Omega customer speaks.
My name is Tony G. I was very impressed by taking the product and the purity of the pharmaceutical grade of the omega-3 fish oil. I really felt very, very good, like, taking the product as far as my mood. I noticed the collagen in my face and some of the lines that have disappeared, my nails, my hair. I highly recommend this product, Pacific Rim. I really, really enjoy the product, and I look forward to purchasing more products in the future.
Find out what Tony and thousands of other people know. Pacific Rim Omegas are the best thing you can do for your health. And get 59% off your order right now when you take advantage of this special exclusive offer. Go to radio.mydailyomega.com right now and save 59% off your order of Pacific Rim Omegas, or call 877-324-4227. That's radio.mydailyomega.com. radio.mydailyomega.com.
Jones and Mike Worldwide at jonesandmike.com. 312-957-7210. Hashtag Jones and Mike.
Where were you when you found out that Brangelina was no more?
I was at work. I was at the office. And I was the first person in the office who saw that it all went down.
It's because you're like a Yahoo clickbait taker. You take the clickbait.
I do.
And you just kind of have it running in your system tray, I think, all the time. And you kind of check it out several times a day so you can be abreast of the headlines.
I wouldn't doubt that if someone monitored me, I'd check it out several times in a minute.
Oh, really? That's like how you mask the pain of staffing?
You know, it's just one of those things where I just find myself going back again and again and again. And it would not shock me that if I went back and... If you had asked me how many times have you clicked on like any Yahoo clickbait stories, I probably would say, five times. And someone would say, actually, 307.
Oh, yeah. Yahoo has some dirt on you. Like, they have a crazy profile of the things you're interested in.
Perhaps.
And so were the millennials like, who's that? Or were they like, oh, no way?
Oh, no, they were very much in the, oh, no way camp.
And so the youngins are into, Brad's 52.
Brad's 52.
And Angelina, like, she's like some sort of a cyborg or something, so who knows how old she is.
Yeah, no, I think she's like 45 or something, 44.
So. Right, so a bunch of 23-year-olds are into these oldie oldsons?
Well, not necessarily into them, but they know them.
And they really, everyone in America was sure that they would go all the way, that it was true love.
I don't know, really, because they just seemed like Brad had a good thing with Jennifer Aniston. She's cute.
I don't know, there's something about her that rubs me the wrong way.
Really?
Great boobs, but other than that, I'm just not a fan of her, dude.
She seems like she's nice, down to earth. I still think she looks great.
All right.
And then you trade off that for someone who, like, wants to go out and to, like... Bangladesh and try to find a child to adopt. And I'm not putting down adopting children, but like just craziness of like she just was always going out there to meet some political figure and she was like wearing a hijab or something. Yeah, you know, it was always just like, oh man, we have millions of dollars. We could do anything. Do we really have to do this? Like she was off the charts do-gooder.
Yeah, like the kind of do-gooder that's like, oh, you know, get a kid from Thailand and one from, you know, Malawi, and that's enough. Why do you have to have six?
Well, and then
what are you running, the United Nations?
And then you do all that, and then all of a sudden she took on these, like, UN spokesperson roles and seemed to take them very seriously.
Yeah.
As though she was some kind of political figure. So
yeah,
to me...
she probably saw, like, Amal Clooney and went like, oh, no, I was the OG in that regard.
Right. And... I look at that and I think to myself, man, if you're Brad Pitt and you could have anything, you looked at what you had with Jennifer Aniston and you went, no, I want that. I want that international chaos. I just never got why he left her. I never got why Brad left Jennifer Aniston.
Well, you've put a lot of thought into this.
I have. Well, here's the thing. I don't like... I'm not a big Brad Pitt fan because of the way he left Jennifer Aniston. It really rubbed me the wrong way.
This is like a whole new side to you. I didn't know.
I'm surprised that you didn't know this.
No, how the hell would I know that you're so into Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie?
Well,
who the hell with a sack would admit that?
No, it's not. I'm not into them. I'm anti them.
That's true. But I mean, you seem, because you're so knowledgeable, you seem like you're fairly obsessed.
Well, no, it was one of those things. There wasn't even anything to be knowledgeable about or obsessed about, but it was just when Angelina and they did that Mr. and Mrs. Smith movie.
Oh, the worst, right?
And that's when they connected and hooked up, right? Well, at the time, it was kind of clear that Brad was having a thing with Angelina, and they kept denying it, almost to a level of where it was insulting.
Yeah.
And then they did some magazine cover for W Magazine or something like that where...
Oh, yeah, George's magazine, W.
Yeah.
Great magazine.
I don't know. They could be affiliated.
Oprah's got a magazine. I got a magazine.
So... They did this magazine cover, and it was around the time when people were saying, oh, there's a ripple of trouble with Brad and Jennifer Aniston, and now Brad's spending a lot of time with Angelina, and Jennifer doesn't seem to be able to have kids, and Brad wants a family, and like this whole thing, and Brad denied it.
Jennifer Aniston is like barren, and that's why he...
That's what the rumor... That's some
so
of
he
what...
he left her for a woman who was going to adopt seven children.
Well, the thing that rubbed me the wrong way was when he did... Specifically, when he did this photo shoot for this magazine cover, and it was him and Angelina Jolie on the cover, and they were surrounded by all these kids in like kind of this Midwestern-looking backyard. Mm. And the scene was like they were the husband and wife.
Ew.
And I was like, dude, that you know the rumors that are swirling around you. Like, why are you... If you're going to leave Jennifer Aniston, why are you doing it this way? I just was like, he became a dude that I just could not respect. So I never really respected the dude. And now to see what's going down now... I don't know. It's starting to veer into that category of schadenfreude.
Oh, well, so, yeah, it's speculated that, you know, most people just go irreconcilable differences. We please, you know, respect our privacy during this difficult time. We are united in our love for our children and want to do what's best for them.
Right.
That's basically the boilerplate PR/lawyer speak that everybody puts out. But in this case, somebody in like Jolie's camp decided, no, we're dragging this SOP through the thickets. And they put out there that like his drug use was out of control, that he has anger issues. And then they leaked that like there was like a child abuse allegation where like allegedly like he like was rough with one of his kids like on an airplane or something.
That's what they say. He was on a flight from France to the United States, got rough with one of the kids, got on the tarmac, was running around, tried to hop inside of a fuel truck.
What?
Yes.
That's going to be a major felony, man.
So he was like losing his mind. And it was funny. I'm not obsessed with Brad and Angelina and Jennifer Aniston.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But as soon as...
You can say that, but I don't believe you.
But I'm not, though. I'm not. But it was funny when I saw this story play out.
Yeah.
It brought me back to 10 years ago.
Uh-huh.
I started writing like an absurdist novel.
Is that a term? Absurdist novel?
Yeah. I mean, there's absurdist writing where it's
really?
Just like so, the scenarios are so out there. That
yeah.
It's just called like, you know, it's
that's
just
like its own genre.
Absurdist.
Like,
well, I don't know that you would go to a Barnes and Noble.
And go to the, there's
go,
like a placard
could
for
I
it?
Go to the absurdist section?
Right next
but
to
there
like
are,
religion and cooking is absurdist.
Yeah, there isn't a section like that, but there are, you know, there's absurdist writing where it doesn't quite fit, you know, what they're writing wouldn't really ever play out in real life. So I started writing this absurdist novel like 10 years ago.
Really?
And I went back and I found it, and it was my life... It was a diary of this fictitious character, and it was my life as Angelina Jolie's personal assistant.
What?
Yes. And it starts...
What?
I'm not kidding you. I got about 45 pages in.
What?
And the
12-point font, 1-inch margins.
12-point font. Yeah, Times New Roman. It's right here. You can turn around. There it is. It's right there.
Is there a title? Is there a working title on it?
Well, I just had on the file.
You,
I just
me,
had
and Jolie
diary, but it was my. No, I was going to do, you know, whatever my, like, you know, Bobby Stevenson, my life, my, you know, a day in the life of Angelina Jolie's personal assistant.
Oh so my God, dude!
Here's what's strange. Here's what's strange.
Yeah. Oh, it hasn't gotten strange yet.
No,
thank
it's
you.
It's about to. The book starts off, this fictitious character is hired as a personal assistant to Angelina Jolie. He has not met the family, and his first assignment is to go to this private airport that no one knows about.
Oh, my God.
And that's where he first meets them. And there's an altercation that takes place at the airport. I swear to God.
Come on.
I'm not kidding. It's right in front of me. So here's an excerpt.
Oh, my God. Bobby Stevenson, Angelina Jolie, A Day in the Life of Angelina Jolie's
right.
Personal Assistant.
And now the idea is like Angelina's like this crazy maniac. And Brad Pitt's like this henpecked husband who's like scared of her. Just as, let me make it a little bit easier. Here we go.
We almost need some like special music or something underneath you.
Just as I glanced down at my watch and noticed that it was 5:14, a roar came from over the horizon. Within seconds, a Gulfstream 5 came into view, escorted by two F-14s. Angelina's jet touched down, and the F-14s sped off. Their mission was apparently complete. The jet rolled into the hangar, and as the doors popped open and the stairs were lowered from the fuselage onto the concrete, a sea of humanity rolled out from the plane. One by one, hairstylists, personal trainers, even a small group of clowns, I would imagine, for the kids, emerged from the plane. A woman that had a child in each hand and a newborn strapped to her chest followed them. At first, I thought it was Angelina, but as the woman looked over in my direction, I could tell that it was a nanny that looked just like Christy Swanson. Moments after the nanny appeared with the children, a jet black Mercedes S600 came flying around the corner. The car stopped at the bottom of the steps, and a man in sunglasses and a black double-breasted suit stepped from the driver's seat and assisted the nanny as she placed all three children in the car. The whole transaction took all of 8 seconds. Everything was executed with military precision that would have had General Patton blushing. After the children were whisked from the hangar, another Mercedes came around the corner, this time picking up the clowns, the hairstylists, and the personal trainers, all in the same car. As the second Mercedes exited the hangar, a bedraggled figure peered out through the plane's exit doors. It's Nathan, right? It was Brad, whispering and waving maniacally in my direction. I ran along the side of the plane. The jet engines were still running softly as I approached him. About 5 feet from the door when he turned to look over right shoulder back into the plane. He spun around and told me while I was Angelina's assistant, he would do all he could help to keep the princess happy. I thought that was so sweet of him to take time to extend a small bit of kindness. A half a second later, Angelina bellowed from inside the plane. Bradley! Bradley! Bradley, you little c***er! Get back in here! If I have to carry my own purse, I swear! Brad rolled his eyes and shook his head. I thought it was too cute, the two of them having a lover's quarrel. I could hear Angelina play fighting with Brad in the back of the plane. She kept teasing him about being a moron, and she joked that she would cut off his left testicle and feed it to his mother if he didn't start pulling his weight. I barely knew Brad from Adam, but if he had 1 ounce of good humor in him, he had to be smoking up Angelina's playful jibes. Brad emerged a minute later with Angelina's purse slung over his shoulder. He joked that I should run for cover as he wiped some tears from his eyes. Brad is so hilarious, and I can tell that hanging out with him will surely be a riot.
Oh my God.
Now, obviously, it continues to go on, and there's all this craziness that, like, ensues.
Your writing is better than your speaking. We need to have Bill Curtis read that.
We should.
Like, very slow,
yes.
Dramatic.
So, isn't that, like, crazy? Isn't that crazy?
And you wrote 45 pages of this and then did what with it?
And then I just kind of just stopped.
Like, because it wasn't holding your attention?
No,
like, you weren't into it?
No. I was enjoying doing it. But then it was kind of weird. It was kind of weird then to write parts that, like, involved kids. Like, I didn't want to make the kids it just felt weird, like, to make the kids look strange and stupid. Like, I had no problem, like, riffing on Brad and Angelina. And I've always kind of thought I would just go back to it.
Oh, my God. Now is the time. Because this could become, like... What if, like, this is so close to what really transpired that you look like you have some sort of, like, clairvoyance?
Well, what have I always said? We come into this world
already
knowing everything.
Yeah.
And then as we live it, we re-experience it.
And what was the story arc? Do you recall? I mean, now that this is kind of ringing a bell.
Yeah, then it kind of goes on. Brad's parents come out to California to visit again, but they hate Angelina. They want they want Brad out of there.
Is Bobby Pfefferson or whatever, whoever your main character is, he's literally just a third person observer and the story unfolds through his eyes, or is he a participant where he's part of these hijinks?
Well, he's an observer to it, but he's like a participant diary? Because he's her assistant. He's almost like a Woody Harrelson type character. So he's like seeing serious stuff go down in front of him, but he's so enamored with being around this Hollywood couple that he's like, oh my God, she's chasing after him with a golf club. They are so cute the way they play.
He doesn't understand the abuse that he's actually witnessing.
Exactly. Yes.
And so who's the protagonist then?
I don't know that there really is. I mean, I guess Brad is kind of, he comes off somewhat, you don't even really like him, but you feel sorry for him.
And I bet that's how it's been.
I don't know.
And I bet when he has these moments where he has breakdowns, it's because he's letting it all out.
That could be.
He's like the seventh fiddle. Like it's like, you know, Robbie, Bobby, Ricky, Mike, and Knock. I imagine that's the Thai kid. N-O-K. In my mind's eye. So Robbie, Bobby, Ricky, Mike, Knock, and then, you know, a couple others, and then Brad's like seventh on the pecking order in that house.
Yeah, and so I could very well see that playing out.
So I imagine like in real life, he's just sitting around his mansion just smoking weed all the time, just like he was in True Romance.
Well, that's what he said he was like with Jennifer Aniston because he was miserable in the relationship.
Yeah, he just
he's always just smoked out.
Yeah, and he just doesn't seem like he's very bright, right? Isn't that, has America definitively come down on, we don't think he's very bright?
I don't know that they have.
Really?
He's very kind of, I don't know. Do people really feel like they know him?
Yeah, maybe that's the problem. Maybe we just need to give Brad a chance. But I feel like he's not very bright, and that he's probably, Angie's whipping boy, just like you're describing. And then he smokes so much weed that when he's on a long flight and he's not able to, you know, smoke weed in front of Robbie, Ricky, Mike, Knock, and Brad, and Angie, that he goes crazy. And it all comes out all at once like Mount Vesuvius.
Right. He can't maintain.
You need to finish this story because this could be like kind of the definitive, de facto, never told story. Of Brad and Angie.
It could be. Isn't that wild, though? 10 years ago.
And people will actually think that, like, this is true. Like, this was really what happened.
And then I could get sued by them. This would be great.
Oh, well, they're public figures. Come on. It's an unauthorized...
Well, no, I wouldn't worry about it. I'm not worried about it. I'm saying if they sued me, that would be great. That would be...
Oh, that would be great publicity?
That would be hilarious.
I've been sued. It's not fun.
Yeah,
it's
but...
It's not fun.
I'm not worried about that sort of thing. I chase down criminals on foot.
They're on foot. You're on Divi. In fact, you're part of, maybe that was Rom's idea. Didn't he grow the Divi thing into the biggest in North America, the biggest bike sharing program in North America?
That may be part of his. Now he's got to start fitting on the handlebars like a little light.
That's right.
So I could on my own go whoop whoop.
Citizen's arrest.
Citizen's
yes.
arrest.
Don't you you utilize the little basket already? Right.
I do.
There's a little basket on the front of the Mary Poppins
bike.
Yeah,
it's a pseudo basket, but I use it.
Yeah, they need to put like some crime-fighting tools in those baskets.
Zip ties, yeah.
Yeah, so you can hog tie people until the serve and protect, you know, gang comes along. The other gang,
right?
Basically, there are two gangs in Chicago. We just have to pick a side. We have to pick a gang to go with. Didn't you say that you had a buddy who was just like, I joined the biggest, baddest gang in the world, Chicago Police Department?
I did, unfortunately. Unfortunately, I do know a gentleman, yeah. Chicago police officer, who thinks he's in the biggest, baddest gang in the land. His own words, by the way.
What do you think he'd think of your Bobby Pfefferson personal assistant to Angelina Jolie story?
He'd think I was a homosexual.
Is he wrong?
Totally wrong. Let's get out of here.